Letters. Sending a letter today is pretty straightforward. Stick a first-class stamp on it, and generally we can be expected to be delivered in this country the next day. Not surprisingly, it was rather different in the Roman Empire of the 1st century AD. A letter had to be entrusted to someone who would carry it and deliver it by hand to the addressee. One of the benefits of the Pax Romana was that this could be done pretty reliably. And this was how Paul's letters got around, including, of course, the one he wrote to Timothy, we heard from just now, which was sent, it is thought, from somewhere in Macedonia to Timothy while he was in Ephesus. What do we know about Timothy? Timothy was born in Lystra, a town in Asia Minor, and that's in what is now Turkey. And he had a Jewish mother and a Gentile father. It turns out that he is the first second-generation Christian we come across in the New Testament. He probably became a Christian during Paul's first missionary journey. And when they met again during his second visit to this area, this time with Silas, Paul invited Timothy to join them. This may seem surprising, since Timothy was still young, both in age and in the faith. But they must have sensed that Timothy had the potential to become a totally committed and thoroughly trustworthy member of their missionary team. And moreover, that God was calling him to join them in their work, which was, of course, absolutely key. And so it was that Timothy became assistant to Paul. To avoid difficulties with the Jews, Paul had him circumcised. Read about that in Acts 16, verse 3. As we learn from Acts and the letters, it is clear that Paul kept him pretty busy. He certainly got around, and we see him popping up here and there in the narrative. First, in Thessalonica, where he was sent to encourage the church after Paul, who was at this time in Athens, had heard that they were suffering persecution, 1 Thessalonians 3. And then Paul sent him from Ephesus to Corinth to try and bring some order to the church there. See a bit about that in 1 Corinthians 16, verses 10 and 11. And there is a mention of a plan for Timothy to go to Philippi. Philippians 2, 19 to 24. Later, he accompanied Paul to Jerusalem to deliver the collection taken among the Gentile churches for the relief of famine in Judea. Acts 20, verse 4 onwards. He was associated with Paul at the time of writing of the letters to the churches in Philippi and Colossae, and it's clear from the two letters he received that he also served as Paul's representative at Ephesus. Finally, we know at some stage he was imprisoned, Hebrews 13, verse 23. The general impression of his character we get from all this is an affectionate, hard-working, and loyal assistant to Paul, but one who lacked forcefulness of character and continued to be self-conscious about his youthfulness. When did Paul write him? Probably about AD 64, from Rome, or perhaps it was from Macedonia, just prior to Paul's final imprisonment in Rome. And why did he write? What is significant about this timing? Maybe Paul had a sense that he didn't have much time left, that he might never have an opportunity to see Timothy again. Turning now to what's in the passage, which was written to encourage and instruct Timothy, perhaps first it's good for us to remember that Timothy had the job of going round and spotting people who were equipped by God to be leaders in the baby churches in the early church. And the characteristics he was to look for are given in this passage. What does it take to be a leader in the church? Well, Paul says, first and foremost, a person who is living a God-centered life and is content in that. As verse 6 of the reading says, of course, there is great gain in godliness combined with contentment. And that's terribly important for a leader to know he or she is in the right place, doing the right thing before God. And of course, being like that is key to spiritual growth and personal fulfillment. And by living like this, leaders set a good example for those who of faith who follow them. So they'll be content with what God is doing in their life. Not saying, oh, I wish God had called me to be this or that, but to get on with the job they're called to do, to be the person they're called to be. And secondly, Paul says they need to be people effective in recognizing and overcoming temptation. And what Jim just read to us details quite a lot about the danger of believing that money brings happiness. Because, of course, you and I know it doesn't. It is a false aim to follow money primarily and believe you'll be happy. And we all know the tension between the attraction of money and following God. We have to have quite clear in our minds that the priority is to follow God. All around us, we know we live in a consumer society. Money is, in a sense, worshipped by many. And we see all the attractive things that you can get if you have enough money. As someone once said with a wry smile, of course, if you have the money, at least you can be unhappy in comfort. And next, a leader needs to be someone with a strong and courageous faith, and who is experienced in fighting the good fight, by which I mean, first of all, living and sharing the gospel, being able to communicate it by lifestyle as well as in word, in a persuasive way. And secondly, be engaged in refuting false teaching. And the apostles and their supporters had that task all the time, going round and affirming people in the faith and reasoning and arguing with those who were trying to lead astray, where they got it wrong. So there's that dual role the apostles certainly had as guardians of the faith entrusted to them. And then we come, in verses 13 to 16, to a rather striking expression where we see that Paul gives a charge to Timothy to keep the command. Now, I puzzled over this quite a bit. It could be that it's a reference back to when Timothy became a Christian and he stood up in front of the congregation in Lystra and witnessed to this fact and was prayed for. But I wonder if there may also be something else here, and this is just my hunch, that is that Paul may well be looking forward to a time when he's no longer on the scene, when his own ministry is ended. And charging Timothy, and charge is a very authoritative word, a very powerful word, charging him to assume greater responsibility when that time comes. And the final bit of this passage, actually, down to verse, including verse 19, refers to how Timothy is to instruct wealthy believers to make use of their riches. And this is where we turn to look back at the story of Dives and Lazarus, which is a story of self-indulgence and neglect of the poor and destitute. Here, Dives, or the rich man, his behavior is grossly out of kilter with, for instance, the way in which rich believers were expected to behave in the early church. And as you and I note this, surely each of us is reminded of our responsibility to helping meeting the needs of the poor. But there may well be more here, for it has been suggested that the three parables we find in this part of Luke's Gospel were told by Jesus as warnings to the Jews that God's judgment was coming on them. And why? Because they had been exclusive instead of inclusive. They've kept the knowledge of God to themselves instead of sharing it. They'd failed to be a light to the Gentiles, failed to share the good news that God's love was not just for them, but for everybody, whatever colour, whatever race, whatever ethnicity, for everyone. And they'd failed to do that, to carry that message of hope beyond the boundaries of Judea and where the new Jewish nation was living at the time. We, of course, know what happened later, that in AD 70, Jerusalem was sacked by, I think, three Roman legions, a most terrible time of suffering and destruction. God's judgment falling on the nation in a very terrible way. As a fellowship of believers, both locally and nationally, we need to take note of this. Make sure we do our bit in spreading abroad that same good news, that God's love is indeed for everyone, both near and far, being willing to cross cultural boundaries to carry the good news out with us. News that is for all. News that is meant for all, out there in this desperately needy and confused world in which we live. Amen.